Hi, good evening, everybody. My name is John Harris with MedicTalk Software, and I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Leo Blatchford, who's been coaching doctors for over 20 years, has a monthly column in Dental Economics Magazine, the author of Playing Your A-Game, a renowned book, and also works primarily on overhead control. And with that said, with today's economy, a 15% to 20% decrease on the overhead is very appealing. How can you help on that, Dr. Blatchford?
Well, thank you very much for the introduction. And what I'd like to do tonight is, first off, I want to thank you, John. I want to thank Rocket Dog for getting these doctors together. I understand there are about 35 doctors registered in this call tonight. Looking at the list, we have doctors from all over the United States, and I think we have all four corners covered and a lot in the middle. Here's something I want to talk about tonight, and I think MedicTalk fits right into this, because if you've been listening to any of the politicians speaking, or would-be politicians, or people that want to become president, etc., what they've all done is they've gone together, and I believe they've created a recession. And if you'll go back and study the recessions, we tend to have one about every 8 years based on the new presidential candidates want to create change. And so in order to change, they have to convince the American public that things are bad. And personally, I thought things were doing just fine, but I read the newspapers, I start to realize there's a recession going on. And what that means is, and this is what that means to doctors, John, is that, you see, their patients are the people that really feel a recession. You know, you take a typical household today who's a school teacher, who's working in a factory, working out there for government, whatever they're doing, and when they're starting to spend $600 to $1,000 a month on fuel, well, all of a sudden things start to change in their house, and one of the things that happens, of course, is that they start to cut down discretionary spending. Now, we've watched this over the years, and the last recession we had was 8 years ago, and then it changes every presidential time we have a presidential election. But here's the interesting thing. There are some things going on, and I just finished reading a 12-page article in The Economist about what's going on in the economy, and the economy is always in people's minds. I weathered a storm in Oregon when I was practicing. People in California quit building houses. Interest rates hit about 20% for mortgages. They quit building houses. We quit cutting trees, and we had an 18% unemployment rate. Well, here's the thing. People come into my office, and I practice in a college town, for heaven's sakes. They're on the state payroll. I can't go ahead with this treatment, Doc. It's the economy, you know. And my first question was, well, tell me about this. Is it affecting you? Oh, yeah, it's terrible. Well, do you still have a job? Yes. Does your spouse still have a job? Yes. So you're still getting a paycheck? Yes. So how's it really affecting you? Well, it really doesn't. But you see, it's in their minds, and so they hold back on discretionary spending. And, John, here's what I'd like your clients and people listening on this call tonight to think about a little bit. If they were to drop their productivity because one or two large discretionary cases a month were to say, gee, I think I'll postpone this, or if that patient doesn't even come into the office because they've decided to postpone this a little bit. Let's take your typical practice out there doing $1 million. And you call and the call can extrapolate for your own numbers and that sort of thing. But let's take a typical practice doing $1 million, and the national overhead average is around 75%. That means you're taking home 250. Now, in the last several years, it's just like in the 90s, everybody was a stock market expert. You know, I had doctors coming to me and say, well, I'm going to retire here soon. I'm making more as a day trader. Well, anybody could do well. Well, in today's environment, then the last few years, it was real estate. Well, everybody can do well when the real market's going up. Well, for the last 15 years, dentistry has been pretty easy. It was pretty easy to practice and do that $1 million and take home $250,000, $300,000. But here's the question. With your current overhead of $750,000, that is how much money it costs to open the doors every day, if you were to have a 10 to 15% decrease in productivity, what would happen to the net income? Well, I've done the math on this, and I'll tell you, all the net comes right, all of the decrease in productivity comes right out of the net because your expenses stay the same. And John, one of the things I see is doctors tend to base their practices and run their practices based on the best months ever or what it was a year ago or whatever. I have worked for years to start, before I start to grow a practice, is to get the overhead down in that magic 45 to 55% net. Or excuse me, 45 to 55% overhead, which produces almost the same net. But here's the thing that I've noticed. So many people in my field, that is consulting, their answer to everything is increase the production. Market more. Spend $100,000 on marketing. Get more patients in the front door. Well, I think that's great, and I think that's really good advice when the economy is booming and people are feeling good and people are spending money. See, it wasn't more than 12 months ago that people would come in and have a large case done and they'd refinance their home, get a home equity loan, and pay for their large dental case. Or a few years ago, they would sell a few stocks and pay for their case. Well, the interesting thing now is they've already taken the equity out of their home and there's nothing left. And so now what they're stuck with is they're afraid to spend the money because they're afraid about the jobs, they're afraid about what's going on. Although, for you doctors, I want you to understand, most of you are not feeling this at this point in your own household. Because at $200,000, $300,000 of net, it hasn't affected you much. But let's say you're making $60,000 or $70,000 household net income. Here's an interesting little sideline I might throw into you, that politicians are talking about the how the middle class is shrinking and we've got to restore that middle class. Well, I recently read an article by an outstanding economist who mentioned the fact that economists recognize the middle class as people that are making between $35,000 and $75,000 a year. And it is true the middle class is shrinking, but it's not at the bottom, it's at the top. In other words, there are more people today making over $75,000 than there were 10 years ago. And so, yes, the middle class is shrinking technically. It's not at the bottom. The bottom is stayed at that 12% forever. 12% of the population makes under $30,000 a year. And yes, that stayed the same, but it's the top that's shrinking. So for those politicians that want to restore the middle class, I guess what they really want to do is lower people's income. So maybe that's what they're talking about. But the point is this. In this kind of economy, the first thing any business needs to do is you need to make sure you're running an efficient operation. You need to lower the pressure. You need to lower the overhead. You need to make sure that you can operate in those low months that you have occasionally. So what I've looked at, and for those of you listening, you know, I know that all of you have an accountant, and you've looked at it, and you've tried to lower your overhead. But here's the problem. You're looking in the wrong places. You're trying to figure out how to lower your supply bill. Well, let's think about it. Supplies are only 5 or 6% to start with. What if you lower it to 20%? How much do you save? You save 1%. The biggest problem is this. It's staffing. The average dental practice across the United States is spending over 30% on staff salaries. Now, when I say staff salaries, I want you to include, when you're sitting down tomorrow with your profit and loss, if you're sitting with your accountant, I want you to make sure that you count everything I'm counting. First off, it's salary. It's matching Social Security. It's workman's compensation. It's medical insurance. In other words, it's everything it costs to keep that staff member in your office. What's it cost to keep them on the job? So in other words, it's the administrative staff, it is the clinical staff, which includes both the hygienist and the assistant. So it's all of those people involved. And you add all that together, and the average is over 30%. And we're seeing practices, John, that are hitting 35%. Now, I've been saying for the last, I've been running practices for 25 years, at 15 to 20% for staff salaries, and the reason we can do that is we don't have so many people. We have less number of people. With less number of people, we can also pay individuals more, and we pay individuals more, we get a higher quality of staff member to start with. Last year, we had several offices that had been, we have one office in Colorado, for example, been operating at 18 staff members, two doctors plus an associate. Today, that office is operating with two doctors, no associate, and eight staff people. The production has gone up. Now you do the math on that one, and they've done well. So the thing that most consultants don't want to talk about is those unpopular things like reducing staff overhead. And accountants tend to compare you to average. Well, if you want to be average, then that get your 30% and you'll be fine. But you see, what we have to do to lower staff overhead is uncomfortable. Going to less people is uncomfortable. And so most people treat it like this taboo subject that nobody talks about. Nobody wants to tell you this is the way to do it. Of course, that's why I've been in this for 25 years, and I can tell you, you have to sometimes do the unpopular thing. But you have to get your practice to that point where you can do that. So if that big case doesn't come in, hey, you're making money. If the big case comes in, you're still making money. You're making more. So that's what we've got to do. So what we need to do is look for systems to replace people. Now, I'm going to tease for a moment and say how it's typically done in most offices. We hire an incompetent person, we don't train them, and we hire them a helper. I'm guilty of that. We've done the same thing. But we see this all the time in offices, and so we've got to get out of that. We have to put systems in place. How does an office go from 18 staff members down to 18 members and produce more dentistry? It's having excellent systems in place. Sharon Bard is on the call tonight. Sharon works in Dr. Michael Reese's office down in Texas, and they're doing close to $2 million. And what do you have, Sharon, four people?
Yes, four.
Four team members, plus the doctor. They do that in 3 days a week. Now, they have excellent systems in that office. In other words, they have figured out the most efficient way to make this office work. They don't hire more people. Now, I come from an agricultural background, and my brothers are farmers. My brothers are very successful farmers. They've started a farm from scratch 30 years ago, and they're multi-millionaires at this point. They're farmers that haven't had to borrow money in 20 years, and they've done extremely well. And since they have 3,000 acres of wheat, and wheat went from under $4, it's been under $4 for 30 years, and all this year it hit a high of 23 2 weeks ago. That's $23 a bushel. They're doing really well. But to make the point here is this. They have one tractor. They spent $250,000 on the tractor alone. It will till, plant, and fertilize 500 acres a day. Now, they have two of those. Pulls a piece of equipment 45 feet wide that's tilling, planting, and fertilizing. That tractor is operated by one operator and a support vehicle truck and one operator there. That replaces six medium-sized tractors that all required an operator and a support vehicle. So they went from one tractor with two people versus six tractors with 12 people. Now, you do the math. Their neighbors say, how can you afford to spend that much on a piece of equipment? And they say, how can you afford not to? And I see systems in a dental office exactly the same way. If I can replace a person that I'm spending $40,000 a year with mechanization, with high technology, then it's very much worth it. If I can replace, run an office with one person in the front because I'm totally using my computer, and I say totally using it, most people are using their dental software to about 25% of its capacity. Most people are not using their dental software anywhere near what it's capable of doing because the people there learn how to do exactly what they need to do, and then you hire a helper. So we run offices that are doing from $1 million to $2 million with one person up front, and we do this routinely. But we can't do that doing the current systems you're doing. See, I would never accuse anyone of not working hard. You see, my brother's neighbors work hard, but they don't work smart. They work hard. I mean, they work harder than my brothers do, but they don't get much done. See, it's not how hard you work, it's what you produce that you get paid for. And this is an issue that we talk about a lot in our coaching programs. You see, there are two economies, John. There's the time and effort economy, and that's what most doctors and most of us grew up with. In other words, we get paid by the hour, we pay our staff by the hour, or we pay them by the month or the day or whatever. And they get paid for working a certain number of days or a certain number of hours. And if they want to get paid more, they work more hours. Well, as entrepreneurs and owners of dental practices, you don't get paid in the time and effort economy. You get paid in the results economy. And the results economy is based on how much you get done. It doesn't matter how many people you have working there. It depends what they get done. So we have some systems that we teach in our coaching program, which is a year long, and we typically can add $150,000 net to a practice. And John, I know you have some systems. You have two systems that you use, and we recommend these to our clients, and I highly recommend the people on the phone tonight. But John, if you could tell us a little bit about, just give us the short version of how this works and how much time can be saved, and I want Sharon to talk a little bit about it as well because they use it in their office. John, give us a little short description of what MedicTalk can provide in dental office.
What MedicTalk Dentforms does is a digital patient chart or electronic filing cabinet. Through your patient management system, we work with about 28 different patient management systems.
And John, when you're referring to patient management systems, you're referring to various dental softwares like
Dentrix. Right, Dentrix, PracticeWorks, SoftDent.
28 of those, yes.
All those, And so when you're in that patient management, you'll click on a bridge like what you see on the digital x-ray. That's going to take you into the patient's chart where you have access to your master consent forms and questionnaires. So simply by a couple of clicks, you're into that file. You can manage those documents and signatures, so you're going to know what's been signed, what's been
addressed. John, let's talk in terms doctors can understand. When you're talking about managing documents, you're talking about the ability to create consent forms, health history, health information histories, questionnaires for patients, and they can either fill those out at the office or at home. Is that correct?
That is correct. The database comes with some consent forms and questionnaires. That's all editable. You can put your own in, but you can fill that out in the office. What is the most streamlined and efficient way is to have your patients fill out a registration form and a medical history and or dental, the one that you're using in the office, to have them fill that out. That gets piped to the office ahead of time, so you have that information when the patient comes in. They sign the questionnaire they've already filled out, a couple of consent forms, and they're ready for treatment.
I can think of a lot of great questions I'd like to have the patients fill out before they get there. Like, for example, fill out a questionnaire. At least they could be thinking about a questionnaire. This could all be done on the Internet. And,
yes,
and they could, for example, a great question I think is, you know, on a scale 1 to 10, we'd like to make sure your visit's a 10. Specifically, what would we have to do to make your visit a 10 next Wednesday and get the patient thinking about that? If you could have the patient, if you were asking the patient, is there one particular question you could ask the doctor that would be helpful? What would that question be? And you can get, there are all kinds of questions we can use. Sharon, you use this system in your office, and you mentioned to me one day a while back that you figure it adds about 15 minutes to each patient, new patient intake, or 15 minutes with a recall patient that you no longer have to spend. How do you use that 15 minutes?
Well, in our office, Bill, we see about 3 new patients a day. I know exactly what my per-hour production is, and that 15 minutes is very valuable for me production-wise to meet our goals, and it's also the most valuable 15 minutes of our new patient appointment. So instead of sitting there going over some forms and having them sign here, sign there, and then me taking it to a computer to enter it, it's already entered. The patient just signs. It takes them less than 3 minutes when they get in our office to sign the necessary forms, and we go right about building the relationship and finding out what the patient wants from our office and from our team.
So, Sharon, could you be a little more specific? I mean, you've had a lot of training from us over the years, and now you
yes.
have to do some work for us part-time. But for the doctors on the phone that are not Blatchford clients, and some of them are, but many of them aren't tonight, what is it you do during that 15 minutes to create a relationship? I mean, that sounds wonderful, but what do you do?
During that 15 minutes, one of the things that I do is I find out what the patient is looking for in a dentist. I allow them to look at our website. Sometimes I'll pull the website up and say, have you seen Dr. Reese's website? Is this how you found the information that you're asking? Have you talked to someone else? If
mm-hmm.
they've had a second opinion, I'd like to know that and like to know that I don't recreate the same thing that they had as an experience in the other office. And then I talk about their family. Where, how did you move here? You know, what does your husband do? That's a wonderful story.
Mm-hmm.
What about
mm-hmm.
your children?
Mm-hmm.
And that tends to relax the patient and make them feel part of our family before we ever start to talk about their teeth or their dentistry. And
mm-hmm.
then within that 15 minutes, we ask about what they would like to have accomplished today. And once they answer that, then I say, have you figured your budget for that?
So you go ahead and start talking about money before,
absolutely.
You, before they see the doctor. Now, where'd you learn that, Sharon?
I learned it from Bill Blatchford. Many times.
Well, that's going to scare some of you doctors. That's going to scare some of your team members. But let me tell you, it absolutely works. You walk into a realty office, and within 2 minutes, they ask you what's your price range. You go into a store to buy a gift for someone, and they ask what you think about spending. This is not such an unusual question, but yet we get right into it. Once we have the patient in the office, we find out, okay, what is the price range? Because if they're thinking about having, for example, and your doctor, Dr. Reese, does a lot of cosmetic procedures. If they're thinking about 10 veneers, and they're thinking it's going to cost a few hundred dollars, and that's all they can afford, or they can only afford what their insurance costs. You know, we have a different conversation than if somebody who says, well, my budget's $20,000. Well, okay. So they already know. And by the way, the patients know more than you think they do. But anyway, Sharon, go ahead.
We often ask that question on the telephone as far as what type of dentist are you looking for. And when they start to say, well, I've talked to Dr. Smith or Dr. Jones, and they never offered me veneers, or if they did, they said this, this, and this. And I ask about their budget, and, well, how would you feel if you thought that would be something like maybe even the purchase of a small car? And they would start to talk about financing, and sometimes, and I've had this happen at least twice a month for the last 12 months, they are pre-qualified for some type of outside financing prior to meeting the patient in the office. It's amazing.
Well, one of our sponsors is Care Credit, and they are able, once you, they can get those pre-financed before the patient even comes in the office, and you can go ahead and set up a line of credit for the patient. If the patient finds out, oh, here's what the budgeted amount is, you very often, I know many of my offices do this, and this is something that we teach, and we've taught this for a number of years, is that we can go ahead and say, well, if you'd like me to, I can arrange that for you before you come in. Now, this is not a new technique. I mean, this is something that's been going on in the real world for years. I mean, there are many, probably not right now, but a few years ago, as recently as in the last 18 months, there were some parts of the country where realtors wouldn't even talk to somebody unless they had a prearranged mortgage. And it also takes a lot of pressure off the prospect or the customer, patient, if they know there's money available to take care of the purchase. So this is not a new technique, but it's relatively new to dentistry. So you use the time. You're saying MedicTalk saves you 15 minutes or so. You also mentioned some savings in paperwork and that sort of thing. Sharon, why don't you talk about that? And John, I'll have you talk about it a little bit, too.
What we did when we first went paperless with MedicTalk is we kept our paper charts down for a full recall so that if we needed to research history and things like that, it was available to us. We confirmed every patient and had that patient go to our website and register and fill out their forms online, and we did it per recall. And the next year, so that was about 6 months it took us to get everyone on the system that we wanted that was filled out.
So in other words, and by the way, for you doctors on this call tonight, most of our clients who are operating with one person at the front and doing $1 million to $2 million are totally paperless. They
totally.
Are absolutely paperless. And because you can't do this processing paper, it just can't be done.
That's correct.
So you have to get this very efficient. And so it took you about 6 months. In other words, it takes 6 to 12 months to become totally paperless from a charted practice, paper charts, because it takes 1 to 2 recall cycles. But you just do them as they come in for recall. Is that right?
That's correct. And then all the new patients obviously come in paperless, so we no longer have to buy the paper chart to put together. We no longer have to label or have a person do that. We no longer have to have the real estate to store those charts. And last year, in a 12-month period, our office saved $10,000 alone on paper.
On paper. That's charts and
just
and
on
paper.
Charts and forms. The forms that we have to fill out and all the little stickers and your stickers. And that's not to speak of the labor that it took to put those together and have those patients fill those out while they were sitting in the office.
And you're able to get all of this dentistry done, and you run the front office by yourself, and I believe you folks only work 3 days a week.
Absolutely, by myself.
And you see, that's what happens when you're paperless. And so what I'd be doing, if I were on this call, and I'm a dentist, and I'm sitting here practicing in the year 2008, I'd be going paperless as fast as possible. And the reason is, it's economics. You cannot run a large practice with paper charts and all the paper that you have to deal with and run this on a small staff, whereas if you're paperless, I believe it eliminates one whole person. So we're saving right there. There's $40,000 to $50,000 a year that you save on that second person in the front. Now that money goes in either when you're above 20%, of course that money that we save between 30 and 20, that goes straight to the bottom line. Now many of our offices who are paperless actually have the hygienist and the assistant actually do all the appointments in the back, and they're also collecting money in the back. I believe you do that, Sharon.
Yes, we do that as well.
And so you see, we have everybody collects money, everybody makes appointments, and so again, another way we can eliminate some people. But this program now, John, you have some figures of how much time it takes and how much savings there is. And by the way, a number that all of you doctors should know, and the number that we really work with our clients on a lot, is how much the overhead per hour is. And for those of you that are not my clients on the call, a couple simple things, take some notes. Take your overhead last year, whatever it was. Take out all your expenses that actually went to the doctor. For example, maybe you have a car in there, or if you have a salary in there for yourself, pull that out. All doctor benefits, pull that out. Now we're down to strictly what it costs to dentistry. Now subtract the lab bill. And the reason I want to subtract the lab is that some procedures don't have a lab bill, and we're going to add the lab bill back in only on those. So you subtract all of your expenses. You get all your expenses, subtract those items I just mentioned. And then you divide that by the number of hours your office was open last year. And what you're going to find is and then you divide that number by the number of providers you have, because you see it costs just as much to provide, for example, a hygiene visit as it does a crown and bridge, operative, root canal, whatever. It costs just as much per hour once the lab is pulled out. So you should know what your overhead per hour is, and then you see you have to, and that to me is one of those key figures that everybody needs to know. I mean, to me, that's just, it's a travesty that most doctors don't know that, and most accountants pay no attention to that. What is the overhead per hour? And now you can start to look at your procedures you're doing and figure out what your time is worth. And now when you start to save 15 minutes here, 15 minutes there, now you're starting to say, okay, now I see where that money's going. John, you had some figures earlier on what it cost to manage a chart, manage a patient for a year. What are
right.
some of those
numbers? I have done some calculations and read some things. And for a 2,500 chart office, it takes about $13,000 a year just in managing those charts. Now, that's pulling a chart, stuffing it, losing it, finding it, following the patient around. That's still not accounting into printer supplies, actually building the charts, getting it to the point of management. So you're looking at probably, and that's just for 2,500 charts. So
yeah.
That goes
well,
up.
Well, that's considerable. So I say it's one whole person in the front in most offices that have two.
Oh, yeah.
If they're paperless. So MedicTalk is really part of becoming paperless, because so many systems like, and by the way, I'm very much a fan of all of these systems, and the two largest ones, of course, are the three are EagleSoft, PracticeWorks, and Dentrix. They're wonderful programs. I'm not critical. John's program is an adjunct to those programs. It doesn't replace them. It's an adjunct to, and it takes that part, because in many offices that are highly computerized, they're still handing the paper, the patient, paper charts, that is, consent forms and health histories and all of that sort of thing, which they still fill out on paper, and then it takes someone to scan all of that information into your paperless system. So this just eliminates that whole step. Or they can do it at home, and it's all done before they arrive at the office. So, John, what is the approximate cost of converting an office? Say I'm already on Dentrix, EagleSoft, or PracticeWorks, or one of the smaller ones, but what would it cost me to add this?
Usually a five-user system with all of the goodies, a couple of signature devices, starts at about $3,000.
Uh-huh. And is there a monthly on top of that?
No, there's not. And that would include 1 year of support and 1 year of eDent forms, which is the online portion. The second year of that is $350 a piece. Then we usually do a combo. If you get the eDent forms and support, we usually do.
That's on a yearly fee?
Yes, And so that's just a yearly. But that includes unlimited updates, phone calls, you know, whatever, however.
So you're talking the first year. If we can replace a person, your system would be about $250 a month.
Approximately, yes,
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is the kind of thing that you have to want the doctors to start thinking about as you start to install systems in the practice. And one of the things that I find is that many doctors don't have strong systems. And I mentioned earlier in a joking way that not having strong systems, we just keep throwing people at the problem. You put strong systems in place, and you can have smaller number of people. But I think even a bigger reason to have strong systems, and I learned this from my roommate from college. My roommate and I wanted to be Navy pilots, and fortunately, this was back during the Vietnam era, and I think they were shooting down so many pilots, they were taking anybody, and so I was passing all the tests, and he was passing all the tests, and then I happened to get accepted in dental school, and my dad pointed out that people don't shoot at the dentist. And so I decided that's a better route to go. So I didn't do that, but my roommate did. He flew jets off carriers in Vietnam, and we're still friends to this day. And I've asked him, you know, well, what's it like sitting out there in the catapult at night, and you're ready to launch, and you give your, just as you give the salute to the deck officer, to launch the plane, the thought runs through your mind, the last time we pulled into port, we replaced half the crew. And I'm thinking, gee, in a dental office, we replace half the crew, and it'd be chaos. And he says, you know, our systems are so good, we can replace the entire crew. And I have all the confidence in the world to sit out there in that catapult. And I think, wow, what a great example. Because, you see, if the systems in a dental office are good enough, we can replace the entire team without a hiccup. And what I find is people talking all the time in some of these practice management seminars about what, how much it costs to have not have continuity of your team, and what's it cost to replace a person, and they've got, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And I'm saying that's a symptom of poor systems. And yes, it costs that much, because what happens in so many offices, you see, that haven't had good systems in place, and I mean in place to the point where Susie doesn't show up on Monday morning, we've got a system in place that's, we put a substitute in there, and they know what to do. It's that easy. Because it's really, you break these little things down. We do that in our coaching programs. We teach some systems that are so strong that we can, the personnel is immaterial. Now, understand, when I get a great team, we're going to pay them well. I mean, Sharon, for example, earns over $100,000 a year on our bonus system in Michael Reese's office, and she's worth every penny of it. She's worth actually more than that, but we don't want to tell her about it.
Thank you, Bill.
but you see, the thing is that, but I do know that if something happened to Sharon next week, the systems in that office are strong enough that we'd get somebody else in there. And yes, it'd be hard to replace Sharon. The subtleties that she knows would be different. But I can tell you within a few weeks, and it wouldn't be very long, we could replace her in that office. Because
we could replace me tomorrow, Bill. That's how well our other team is.
We won't tell Michael that, though.
No, don't tell Michael.
We won't tell Michael Reese that tonight. But he knows that. He does know that, but he won't replace Sharon. Sharon's real good, and Sharon earns every penny if she earns. But we do know the systems are good enough that someone else could step in there tomorrow and run that office, and it would work just fine. And that's one of the advantages, a bigger advantage of systems. And anytime you can systematize things, for example, you know, these health history questionnaires and all that sort of thing, it's a big help. So that's what I see. John, anything else on your system that would help somebody? We've covered it. We can replace that system if you're close to paperless and you are still doing forms for $250 a month. You can eliminate that part.
Yeah, there is you know, a lot of people think that that the scanning is paperless, and I guess that is the ultimate goal is being met, but you're still having to do a lot of printing and management of that paper in order to get to a scanning process, and then what do you do with it? Probably shred it, maybe archive it. So
right. You're
still getting to the same goal, but the fact that our forms are already in the computer, we're attaching a digital signature through an e-pad.
And I believe,
very legible.
I'm not an attorney, John, but I understand that if you have a digital signature, it's legal. But if you have a paper signature and you scan it, you're required to keep that paper signature.
I believe that's correct.
That is correct.
There's a bill in Congress, I think it was 1998 or 97, that said that digital signature is the same as pen and paper.
Yeah, I believe, but you know, trying to get a bill through Congress, it takes 15 years to get these guys off their rear ends.
But if not, I'd be going to Home Depot and buying a bunch of stuff every weekend.
Right. But you see, I think that the digital signature is legal, and it can stand on its own, alone. But if you have a paper signature, then I believe you have to save that paper signature. I believe you have to archive that. I don't think you can destroy it.
There's a cost associated with archiving that document.
So this is just another way that we can eliminate some labor. We don't have some, and those, and by the way, those signatures on those consent forms and the signatures that they place on a manually health history every 6 months when they come in, I believe then that's going to have to be archived as well. So what you have now is a paperless system, but you don't quite have it paperless. So you're still archiving files. So this could be a big labor saver.
I know that Katrina's been around the news ever since it happened, and these poor dentists, these guys lost everything. You know, they're still picking up papers and charts from around there, and you're you're good to go. So in case of fire fading, portability, all of that comes into play as well.
Yeah, well, we've been running our business paperless for a number of years, and I'll tell you, it's just incredible. But anyway, so to wrap this up tonight, first off, I just want to point out that if I were practicing today, and since I'm working with roughly, I limit myself to 50 doctors a year, and one of the things that we're doing at every one of our offices, we've always done this, whether it's a recession, whether it's boom time, whatever it is, we've always said the first thing that you want to do in any business is run it as efficiently as possible. I mean, I see too many doctors out there, John, that are trying to outgrow their overhead. And in boom times, sometimes we can do that. We can actually produce enough that we make that work. But I want to point out that the clients I'm working with today, the first step we're doing is working on getting their overhead down to where it's controllable so that we can actually make money on our low months. Because you see, most doctors, and I get a chance to look at probably more profit and loss statements than anybody on this call. And I've literally look at hundreds of them a year for doctors. I mean, hundreds of doctors a year, because we don't take every client that comes along. But we have doctors that want me to take a look at that. So we look at lots of them. And we can tell you that most doctors, if they had three bad months in a row, they'd be down at the bank borrowing. They'd be down at the bank borrowing money to operate, and I hate to see this, because once you're borrowing money to operate your practice, you're working for the bank. You're no longer self-employed. You're just an employee of the bank, and I hate to see that. It's a downward spiral. And then if you have, in a time when credit gets tight, and you go down to your bank and you borrow money for operating money, and the banker looks at it and looks at your profit and loss the last few months and says, well, you're kind of a downward trend here, and they're not as excited to loan you money. And so I hate to see you do that, because if it continues, and one thing I'll point out, that almost every time we have an economic adjustment, and if you don't recognize the severity of what took place, I'd like you to study, if any of you get a copy of last week's Economist, there's a 12-page article in there that really dissects what took place when Morgan Chase bought out Bear Stearns 2 weeks ago, and how the Fed backed that sale, and why they did that. And if you understand the significance of what they did and why they did it, our economic system would have collapsed with investment banks the size of Bear Stearns collapsing. And if you followed their stock, I mean, it went down to practically nothing. Morgan Chase was able to pick it up for a song. And that was a tremendous thing that took place. Now, the administration right now is coming up with some of the biggest economic changes and safeguards ever put in place. And the reason they're doing this is they are running scared. I mean, I hate to sound like a doom and gloomer, because that's not my style at all. I'm always optimistic. But I'm optimistic about it. It'll recover. But just like every other recession we've gone through, it generally doesn't happen in a month or two. It generally cycles for about 2 years. And so it's going to be some time, I believe, before we see the boom time of the 90s and the boom time of the early 2000s back again. And we're going to see, again, as I mentioned at the first of this call, most of you aren't experiencing this. And I was kind of oblivious to it, too, until I started to study what's going on. But if you're taking a look at the typical family out there, and last week my wife and I spent a week in Costa Rica, with our two daughters and our son-in-laws, and one of our son-in-laws is an architect, and he's got a reasonable salary, but it's not great. Now his wife, my older daughter, is going to dental school, so she doesn't have any income right now. The other daughter is a school teacher, and her husband's in construction. I mean, he's a contractor. He's got his own contracting company, and right now he's building one house. Now, if you were to go back a year ago, he builds large homes. He's building single, it's a 6,000 square foot house he's building right now that a year and a half ago, he was building three of those at one time. Now he's building one, and he has nothing lined up after this. There'll be another year before this house is finished, but normally he's picking jobs. Right now he'll take them. And so they're telling me when they're spending $600 to $800 a month on fuel and how much it's affecting them, I'm starting to listen. So I want you to start listening to your patients. My prediction is that, number one, we're going to see this for a couple of years. I'm going to be speaking at AECD at a sponsored workshop this year. It's the same message I told them last year. I says, you guys have got to open up the sieve a little bit at the top of your practice and be a little more general, not quite so tightly niched, because the highly niched cosmetic practice is always the one that suffers during any kind of an economic slowdown.
Rodney O'Connell from Rochester, New York. And I wonder, I imagine most dentists really love their staff. If you were to have a staff meeting to present this idea to them to go paperless, and the bottom line is that someone's going to lose their job, how do you segue that and get people to
That's a good question. Here's what you have
idea.
To do. Is it Rodney?
Yes.
Well, you know, Rodney, I've worked with some doctors from Rochester in the past, and you guys have gone through some tough times up there. And Kodak was your biggest employer in town, and when Kodak, when digital came along, people quit buying film, and Kodak only had one product at that time, and that was film.
Right. Okay.
You laid off a lot of people up there, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It was a shift. Now, how do you segue into that? Well, here's the question. And this is a tough answer. I mean, this is a tough answer. It's a tough question to deal with, but here's what happens in a dental practice. Number one, there's a leader. And leaders sometimes have to make uncomfortable decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we find, and you're going to find that I work for doctors. Now, I'll go to the wall for staff members like Sharon who make things happen. But if your team, if they got wind at all that your practice is high overhead and they're not doing quite as well, I'll tell you what, you put an ad in the paper and something for a help one, and some of your staff will answer the ad. And we've had that happen enough times to know that it happens. They're looking at the want ads all the time. And the interesting thing is that so many doctors are afraid to cut staff, and they'll put it up to a vote of the staff. Well, let's see. Let's take a vote here, staff. We're thinking about cutting. What do you all think about it? What do you think the answer is going to be, Rodney?
They're not going to like that at all.
They're not going to like that. So here's what you have to do,
and
this is the hard part. You have to make a decision. You reduce the size of the staff, and then you announce the ones you have left, what you've just done, and you don't know how you're going to make it work, but you're going to. You don't go to them and ask for consensus. I can tell you at one point, the first year I hit $1 million in production in Corvallis, Oregon, was 1985. Crowns were $300 at that time. I did it that first year. I only had an associate the last 3 months of the year, and we broke $1 million. I had 16 staff members. You know, I had 5 people in the front office. What do you suppose they were telling me? What do you suppose they were telling me about their regards to enough help, not enough help? What do you suppose they were telling me?
Need more help.
We need more help. Mm. We need more help.
Right.
My accountant would come in. He visited my office once a month, and he'd say, you know, Bill, he said, work is not noisy. Why is it so noisy in here? Well, the next year I did the same production with 8 staff members. I tell this story, I don't ever tell a story in seminars, but I tell it on teleconference. I have only doctors. And this is not a story to tell to your team about Latchford, but the first year we hit $1 million, we had a Christmas party at our house. My wife asked me to count heads because we'd prepared dinner for everybody. We had Santa Claus coming. We had live music. We had a great big time. She counted heads. There were 48 people. This was staff, spouses, and children. That evening, my wife and I realized that we were supporting 48 people.
Yes.
That later that evening, my wife and I were sitting out in the kitchen cleaning up and eating the last of the leftovers and, you know, doing that kind of thing. And my wife looked at me and said, you know, we do this every month. I said, what do you mean? She says, we get the leftovers. And what do you mean by that? You know, naive dentist, of course. And she said, well, every month we produce a lot of dentistry and we pay the staff, we pay the rent, we pay the lab, we pay the supplies, and we pick what's left over. See, my staff could not understand, Rodney, at that point, when I was doing $1 million, which was, you know, it was a lot of dentistry in 1985. And it's about, you know, if you take today's fees, probably 3 million or so today. And my staff didn't understand. You see, if I had a $70,000 month or a $65,000 month, I didn't get paid.
Right.
And they'd never worked in an office that did $60,000 a month before, so they thought I was filthy rich.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't get it. If we didn't do $80,000, I didn't get paid.
I
was making about $300,000 at that time. But I went down to my office the next morning. So I was doing $1 million and making $300,000. So jot those numbers down. In other words, 70% overhead. But I had a good buddy that was taking home $300,000, and he was only doing $600,000 gross. What's wrong with this picture? In other words, I was doing an extra $400,000 worth of production to make the same as he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Now, I went down to my office the next morning, and I did some math, and I did some work, and where I was going to cut some overhead, and I eliminated three positions the first thing Monday morning. That was very tough for me to do. It was 3 weeks before Christmas. I mean, it was the worst timing and everything, and I can tell you it was the worst day of my professional career.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my staff, I gathered the rest of them around me and told them what I had done, and I said, I don't know how we're going to do this today, but I know we can, because I had three hygienists, you see, and I had a full-time hygiene assistant, a full-time hygiene coordinator to fill the hygiene schedule, but I did some math, and I found that I didn't have 3 days of hygiene a week. I really only had about 2.5 hygienists, and so I needed about 2, and so I eliminated that half-time hygienist, and I went on down, and I said, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we are, but I said, I'm going to tell you one thing. Before you come to me today, I want you very careful how you approach me. If you come to me and say, Bill, I don't know how we can do this, but we can do it and we'll figure it out, you're in good shape. But if you come to me and say, there's no way in the world this is the dumbest thing you've ever done, be very careful how you approach me. I let 2 more people go before the day was over.
I understand.
I went from 16 down to 11, and I'll tell you, all of a sudden, my team pulled together. The next 3 people to leave was by natural attrition. We were in a college town, and husbands graduate, or spouses graduate, I should say, and people move away, and the next 3 people were by attrition. A year later, we had 8 people, and we still did $1 million.
Wow.
And my team pulled together in a way they'd never pulled together before. And I take this office out in Colorado, I used as an example a little while ago, that went from 18. We had 18 people. And they were just going, they were coming in, and they were all working. There was like kinetic motion in there. You know, it's just people working, doing their thing, but nobody was working together. They've got 8 now getting more work done than the 18 we're doing. Now, how's that tell you? What's that tell you?
More productivity, more efficiency.
That's right. And they're working like a team instead of a group of 18 individuals.
Right.
And I have, over the last 25 years, I have probably, I don't know, if I don't get the reputation of Chainsaw Al at the dental field, I don't know why I don't. Remember Chainsaw Al Dunlop, he'd go into companies and reduce cost, and it was Chainsaw Al. But I eliminate staff in almost every office I go into. And I shouldn't tell you guys on the phone this night tonight, because I'd like some of you to enroll in my coaching program, and that's the scariest thing we have to do. But here's the interesting thing. It's also the most difficult thing we do, and it's also the thing that will make the biggest difference in a dental practice as far as the overhead and the net income go. And I can add $100,000 of the net to the bottom line. And I'll tell you, when doctors see the difference it makes in the bottom line and the whether it's fun to come to work or not, they can figure this out. In other words, if you paint a great enough picture of what the outcome is going to be, I can go through a lot of difficult times to get there. But we study the practice, we figure out, okay, where can we make the cuts? And I never meet these people, so I don't have that emotional attachment to them. But I have a great question. If you're so darn good, and this is not a question to you, Rodney, or any of the doctors, it's a question to the size of these teams. If we're so good and we're so experienced and we are so efficient, why does our overhead for staff run at 30%? Because that's average. So if we're spending the average amount on our staff overhead, what's that tell us about the quality of our team? They're average. They're average. Their performance is average. And same thing that sometimes team members tell me, well, gosh, I've got 20 years of experience. I'll say, what new skills did you learn last year? What business book did you read last year? you have 20 years of experience or 1 year and repeated it 19 more times? So you see, it's amazing how, I know that Dr. M is on the call tonight from Dalton, Georgia, and Patrick, are you there? Might have to hit the 6 button on your phone.
Yes, Bill, I'm here.
So tell us about, you've made some staff reductions since we started to work together.
Yes, at the beginning of the month, at the beginning of March, I attended Dynamo at the beginning of February, and it was clear to me after Dynamo that I needed to let two people go, one assistant, one hygienist. And it was really tough, but I'm 2 weeks removed from making that really tough decision, and I couldn't be happier. I haven't seen a slowdown in production. The morale of the staff has gone up. Everyone just got bonused even more today, I'm thrilled because now the remaining team members are more motivated to be cross-trained, and they're working together as a team more. So I do
see the benefits of it. And Patrick is running a coaching program, and I can tell you there's lots of hand-holding. There were a lot of emails, phone calls back and forth between Patrick and myself, between Patrick and our consultant. And it was something he had to do, and it's tough because Patrick's a real compassionate person. He loved these people, and it's the toughest thing you have to do. But you do the math. You save two people's salary. I mean, there's $100,000 a year right there just in salary savings alone. And now we have money we can pay the rest of the staff, and if Patrick has a little bit slower month, it's not going to kill him because he saved, you know, probably $7,000 or $8,000 a month in those two positions. Well, more than that, since one was a hygienist. One was a hygienist, so probably a little more than that. So. Well, that's a good question, Rodney. You didn't know you'd get a long answer like that, did you?
No, I sure did, and thank you so much.
It's a tough one, though, and that's the toughest thing. And I think that, and you know, I think that's the thing that makes our Blatchford Solutions coaching program stand out from so many other consultants is the answer is not the easiest answer. See, it'd be much easier to come in and tell you, why don't you go out and spend an extra $100,000 on marketing and just raise your gross? You can just produce more. Well, the problem is we've all done that. You're producing as much as you know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
You have as many new patients, and you can go out and spend a lot of money on marketing. Maybe you'll get more new patients, and maybe you won't. And what I'm talking about right now, especially in a time of when economic times are a little more difficult, and it's all perceived, by the way. It's all perception, but perception is reality. See, if your patients out there and wherever you are and hometown USA believe there's a recession, they slow down on their spending of discretionary items. And it's all in their head.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in their head. And, of course, if you think that the federal government's payment of a few hundred dollars to all these people is going to make a huge difference, I mean, well, wait a minute. So a typical family out there gets $350. Is that going to, are they going to come in next week and have 10 veneers?
And
of course, you're not going to, and none of you are going to see any of that refund money anyway because you're all out of their income level they're going to pay it to. But anyway, I don't get into politics here, but I mean, it's not going to make any difference. It's a joke. It's a joke. So anyway, I want to wrap this up. John, I want to thank you very much for putting this group of people together tonight. I hope that some of the doctors on the call certainly will take a very strong look at your product. I've certainly looked at it. I recommend it highly to our clients. And it's one of those things that saves a lot of labor, a lot of time, and I think it saves money. But I think more importantly, as Sharon Bard pointed out, it gives her more time to spend that, develop that relationship with the patient, which is where the big cases come from. And so I think that's one of the bigger benefits of it. All of you on the call will get a call from one of our representatives and also from John. And here's a request that I have. At least return the call. If you're interested in John's product or our coaching program, take the call and talk to our representative or his representative. If you're not interested, take the call and tell him, no, I'm not interested at this time. But don't just leave us hanging. I mean, it's one thing that I have a little thing about. If I call most business people, they'll return the call. And many dentists have got this, I just don't return the call. And say, hey, I'm not interested. We won't bother you if you're not interested. We don't want it. We will not, you and not chase you. So thank you for taking a time with us. I know that the East Coast, it's really late back there. And for those on the West Coast, you're probably waiting to get dinner. So thanks for staying on the call. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Sharon.
Have a nice evening.